Well, it's a beautiful, not sunny, but it's still a beautiful Monday morning. And I know some of you get a little grouchy on Monday mornings, like back to work, the weekend was too short. Well, here we are. Thank you for joining us on Voices of Montana. I'm Steve Arviscow, your guest host. Hey, I want to talk about your summer travel plans, because I've made a personal decision. Summer's not till June-ish timeframe, but actually Memorial Day weekend coming up, so I think it's kind of summer. I've decided I'm going to stay home. There's a hazard-rich environment going on out there. We have viruses on cruise ships and the tick population's exploding this year. And I heard something about Legionnaire's disease and great white sharks off Cape Cod. And then you toss in the high price of fuel and a hot, dry summer. Oh, my gosh. I think staying home would be the healthy, safe choice. I also think maybe I need a reality check. And to do that today, I've brought in John Forte, CEO of Riverstone Health and public health officer for the city, county, Yellowstone, here today to give me a little bit of guidance on a healthy summer, healthy travel in Montana. And if your travel plans take you beyond Montana, he's going to give us a little guidance on all that today. We got a lot to talk about today on Voices of Montana. Well, we've been talking a lot about politics, so, and not rightfully so. We've got a primary election coming up early June, and then we'll go to the generals, and it's just a crazy time. And it just seems like we never get past politics being a coffee table and conversation that we're constantly having. Well, I want to switch gears on us today. We've got the Memorial Day weekend coming up. That's an important time for us to all slow down and pause and remember those who have sacrificed, the ultimate sacrifice. But it's also that time where, as Montanans, we kind of gear up and think about the summers that's to come. We like to go outdoors. We maybe have travel plans in and around Montana, but also across the country. Some of us might even want to be traveling internationally. Some of you are brave enough to jump on a cruise ship, which I had friends of mine here a couple of weeks ago trying to convince me to go on a group kind of cruise ship thing. And I told them flat, no, don't do cruise ships. And then I hear about this virus on a cruise ship, and I'm calling them back later today and saying, see, I told you so. I just don't go on a cruise ship. Okay. I really know that I need a reality check. So John Forte's here, CEO of Riverstone Health. John, help me out a little bit. Am I overreacting to all of the environmental risks that are out there? Maybe not the sharks at Cape Cod. I'm not going there anywhere. But everything else, am I overreacting?
Oh, gosh. Good morning, Steve. And thanks for having me this morning. You know, when people hear about something like hantavirus in the news, especially tied directly to a cruise ship, and they hear the term outbreak, people get scared.
Yes, I did.
It's understandable. It raises a concern. But you know what? I'm here to tell you the most important thing for our listeners across Montana and Wyoming to understand the overall risk to the public across the world and across the United States to this specific cruise outbreak is incredibly low. Incredibly low.
Not zero.
Not zero, but incredibly low. Okay. And nothing's ever certain in life, right? Except death and taxes. But we're not going to talk about either of those today. You know, this virus, this hantavirus, is something that we've known about and we've managed for decades. It's not something new. This isn't COVID 2.0. This isn't going to blow up and go across the world. We have well-established systems to monitor and respond to this specific situation, particularly on cruise ships. You know, as a public health professional, I avoid cruise ships too. They're just petri dishes.
Thank you very much. I'm gonna bump knuckles with you. I'm gonna call my friends and tell them my public health official said no cruise ship. Now, you're in the cruise ship industry, I'm so sorry I'm doing that to you. Hey, John, before we go further, I want to talk a little bit more about that virus, because I think it does kind of go, oh, okay, we've been down this road before, and our alert kind of go off a little bit. Maybe they're yellow and not quite red, but they do. But back up a little bit. You've been on Voices of Montana, I think, in the past. I bet Tom's had you on talking about all kinds of things, because you're an expert in public health in Montana, but some people may be new to listening. Give us a little bit of your background. I want to back us up a little bit. I want to talk about your background and then define for the audience, what's the roles and responsibilities of a public health officer? And then we're going to dive into some of the more specifics.
Yeah, no, it's no surprise. You know, I've been to Voices before, but I am an outsider. I'm an East Coaster, born and raised in Pennsylvania.
So you might have ventured out to Cape Cod, where those...
And we just had a shark bite in Assateague off the eastern shore of Maryland, where I spent some time.
Okay, I'm not going there either.
You know, the Atlantic Ocean, that's where sharks live. And so, you know, occasionally these things happen. But I grew up on the East Coast, grew up going to the beach, swimming with the sharks. But spent some time in Washington, D.C., spent a decade in the VA health system, helping America's veterans navigate a crazy bureaucratic system of VA healthcare.
Thank you for that work.
Absolutely.
Important.
Absolutely. But I grew up in rural northeastern Pennsylvania, surrounded by dairy farms, and just love rural America and our rural communities. And grew up in a small hospital setting where I fell in love with healthcare and public health. And when I got out of the VA, I said, you know what? I got to go back to my roots and get back into community health, and started running a community health center on the eastern shore of Maryland, where there's more chickens than people. It's Purdue country. a lot of poultry over there. And then somebody gave me a call and they said, you know, what do you think about bringing your skills and knowledge to Billings, Montana and Riverstone Health? And the second I found out about Billings and Riverstone and just the incredible place that it is, the incredible team that we have within the Yellowstone City County Health Department, our FQHC, our community health centers, Warden Joliet, our rural clinics, our school-based health centers, our home health and home hospice team, I had to join. I had to sign up and come here. And so while I may be an import to Montana, I'm willing to step up and take care of the public health, but also fit in. You know, I'm not looking to change anything. I'm not looking to make Montana something different than it already is. I want to be here. I want to integrate into this community. And it's been great to do that for the past 3 years, going on four.
So as you get up, and there's other public health officers across Montana, and we'll talk later about partnerships and how you network with that team across the state. You get up every day. What's the basic job of a public health officer? I know it's broader in your context with the breadth of Riverstone Health, but generally speaking, a public health officer does what?
Yeah, we monitor for threats to the public's health, and whether it's something that's going on across the world or something that's happening right here in our backyard in Billings or across the state or the Mountain West. No day is exactly the same. And that's why I love this job. I will never, ever get bored. Waking up on a Monday or going home on a Friday, there is always something new happening.
So all kidding aside, I honestly, when I heard about the cruise ship and the hantavirus, and I had some familiarization with that virus in a different context, Southern Colorado, New Mexico area, there each summer there would be a little bit of an outbreak and people would have to be cautious about how they're cleaning things. You're not stirring up. So give us some advice that applies to us here in Montana about that virus.
Yeah. So again, incredibly rare. We have had over the past 30 years, only 46 cases in Montana. And I want to make a distinction. The Andes hantavirus that was found on this cruise ship exists in one particular rodent in southern Argentina, and these tourists found that. The original tourists went, somehow they found the Fodor's travel guide that says go to the public dump in Ushuaia. As a public health official, I do not recommend ever going to the public dump as a tourist in a foreign country. And they got sick with this particular strain. That strain may interact with people-to-people transmission. The hantavirus that we have here in Montana and the Mountain West in the United States, zero person-to-person transmission. You have to come in contact with saliva, rodent droppings, get bitten by the mouse that is out there. And so it's important. We want people to be aware that this summer, right now, it's springtime. People are going up to the mountains. They're getting their summer cabins ready at the lake or in the woods. As you're cleaning out, be careful. Take precautions. But this is a rodent-borne disease. It's not about person-to-person transmission. So we're not worried about another pandemic or widespread disease breaking out across the globe. But you're cleaning out cabins, your barns, your sheds, garages that might have been closed up for the winter. That's the real-world place where you're going to potentially encounter this. Not every day going to Walmart or out at Shipton's. You are going to want to focus on prevention here. And so air out those cabins. Open the windows, open the doors. Ventilate any closed spaces before you begin cleaning. Avoid sweeping or vacuuming with the shop vac, rodent droppings, where that can become airborne, right? Use wet cleaning methods. Hose it out. Wear protective gloves. You know, oh gosh, you don't want to hear your public health officer say this, but oh shucks, wear a mask if you're cleaning out that rodent-infested place. And just keep rodents out. Seal your cabins up. Seal your barns. Trap. Store food appropriately. Use baits and pesticides to keep those out. So while Hanta virus is something that people need to be aware of in Montana, it's not our biggest health risk that we're going to see this summer.
Ah, and so great segue. Before we go to that segue, because on my list I have top issues facing public health across Montana. So you're going to touch on a few of those for us. Coming up in our next break, I want to talk also about tick season.
Yeah.
Because we're in the throes of it. And I've heard, just given weather conditions, what have you, those numbers are potentially significantly higher. I don't know if we've experienced any of that quite yet. We're checking our pets and that sort of thing. So give us some guidance on that. Quickly, before we take a break, I'm going to take 1 minute. There was a little thing called Legionnaire's disease. Is that something that we should also pay attention to?
So Legionella, it's out there, and it happens when hotels, industry, large facilities don't take care of their water supplies and their water systems within their buildings. The Legionella bacteria exists in every water supply. It's in the Yellowstone River. It's in our lakes and streams. It's out there. It's natural. But water treatment plants take care of it. They keep it at a minimal level. And then when it gets into your building, you're taking care of your building supplies. You're heating your water above 135 degrees, up to 140 degrees. And you're keeping your hot water systems engaged. You're flushing your water systems. You're keeping those things used appropriately. And so the risk is very low, Steve. We had one hotel here with an issue. They started flushing their water system late last week, and that should take about another week to flush through their entire hotel property, and we'll manage the risk. The good news is, unless you have COPD, asthma, upper respiratory issues to begin with, you're, again, at very, very, very low risk of contracting Legionella, Legionnaire's disease. It is something that's only found in water vapor. I'm not going to cough and give it to you. It happens when you're taking a hot shower in that hotel environment or in industrial HVAC settings that aren't well-maintained and cleaned.
Got it. Thank you. Very good guidance. Well, welcome back to Voices of Montana. I want to apologize to our audience. When we broke for this commercial break, I said, when we come back, we're going to talk about ticks. And I could just see you having your morning cup of coffee or your second or third or maybe even a late breakfast and going, oh, my gosh, we're really going to do this? Yes. In Montana, we need to be aware of some of those little creepy crawly hazards that we have. And here today to help inform us about that is John Forte. John's the CEO of Riverstone Health. John, what do we need to know about ticks?
Well, Steve, it's a common misperception that, you know, we don't have to worry about ticks in Montana because we're in a northern climate and it gets cold enough in the winter and it kills them all off. Well, unfortunately, as the world turns and things get warmer, you know, ticks are far more common and more likely every summer. And so we need to worry here in the Northern Rockies and across the plains about tick-borne illnesses. That's Lyme disease, Rocky Mountain spotted fever. We are seeing an increase and an uptick, particularly among folks who hike and camp and hunt and work outdoors. And that's our farmers and our ranchers and folks who love to hunt. If you find yourself in the tall grass or in a brushy area in a wooden environment, that means that you could find a tick on yourself. So the good news is this is all very preventable. Come home if after working in the field or out in the woods, do a tick check. Great bonding opportunity with your wife, husband, significant other. You know, cover, protect, and check. Long sleeves and pants, especially if you're out in the tall grass. Repellents like DEET, permethrin. Treat your clothing, treat your tents before you go out there, backpacks, etc., your boots. And then do those daily tick checks in the warmer areas, your armpits, your groin, behind your knees. That's where they're going. And then in your hairline as well, along your head.
I'm just getting the shivers.
Everybody getting itching, you know?
We just lost half our audience.
Gosh, but you know.
But it's important. The outcome of a tick bite that potentially could produce the Lyme disease, Rocky Mountain spotted. Those are serious illnesses, right?
For sure.
That are difficult to treat, as I understand.
Yeah.
Maybe the technology or the science is much better, but I've known people who have gotten Lyme disease and they struggle with moving past that. Are those diseases still difficult to treat?
Treatments are getting better. I want folks to know, you know, most infections happen because a tick bite goes unnoticed. And that tick burrows in there and it spends a lot of time in there, days, weeks. And catching them early is one of the best things that you can do to prevent any tick-borne illness. So the two things, Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Lyme disease is a bacterial infection in deer ticks. Not very common here in Montana.
Okay.
That classic bullseye rash around the bite you're going to see, and fever, fatigue, headache, joint pain, the classic signs of Lyme disease. Also joint swelling, and then it can transition to neurological symptoms. But again, low risk, black-legged deer tick, not widely established here in Montana. The one we have to worry about, Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Again, another bacterial infection. Same thing, fever, headache, muscle aches, rash after a few days can become serious and life-threatening. But, you know, again, low risk. However, the ticks that carry Rocky Mountain spotted fever are the wood tick and the American dog tick, and those are two of our most prevalent ticks across the whole state of Montana. One thing I want folks to know, Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services, on their website, you can find a tick tracker. And okay. I would love for folks, you know, it happened to me the other day. We were on the way to Kalispell, stopped in the Sealy Swan, went for a hike with the kids at Holland Lake, and I found a tick on my kiddo. And I flicked it off, found it, killed it, and I did the wrong thing. You know, the state actually wants us to kill them, put them in a Ziploc bag, and send them in to the state lab. There is a Montana tick tracker. It's an online resource. Save the tick, fill out the form, tell the state where you found it, where were you hiking, was it in Yellowstone County, was it somewhere else across the state. If you go on there today, there's like zero ticks in Yellowstone County, but I know they're out here. And
we just
listeners here today,
them.
We haven't reported them.
Okay.
So data is important. We want to know where the ticks are, what types of ticks are out there, where we're finding them, so that we can be more informed. And then the state lab will take it one step further. They'll test the tick to see if it's carrying Rocky Mountain spotted fever or Lyme disease or something else.
Okay. That seems like a lot of extra effort, but I can visualize the importance of that data. Your extra effort to send that in creates a database that then educates all of us to what what to be aware of and conscious of, and the prevalence of ticks in a particular area. It sounds weird. Oh, we're going to capture, kill that little guy, put him in a Ziploc bag and send him to the state. That's a lot of extra effort, but that information is valuable and important. Hey, if you have a question for John Forte, you can give us a call at 866-627-5483 or send us a quick text. Text your question to 781-627-5483. And John and I will wrestle through those questions and try and get you some answers. What else? You partner with public health officers across the state. So as a group from end to end of Montana, what keeps public health officers up at night as we come into the summer months in Montana?
Yeah, you know, Steve, we love and we value our time outdoors. We have an incredible outdoor lifestyle, and we live in an incredible place that allows us to get outside. Whether we're out in the mountains or out in the plains and the prairie, the same outdoor lifestyle that brings tick exposure to light also brings some other major health risks. And that's about the heat and the wildfire smoke. And unfortunately this year, low water levels, we're really worried about wildfire smoke this year. And not just because of the danger that fire brings, but if you're outside and you can smell the smoke, it is impacting your health. So it is impacting your lungs.
You can smell it. You're breathing it.
Absolutely.
We've got a break coming up in a couple minutes, but talk to us about when you issue a health advisory related to smoke conditions. What are those factors that you look at?
Yeah. So the biggest factor that we look at is the air quality index, the AQI. And we can talk about that later after the break. But the air quality index is super important. It's something that folks can track on their own. Online resources, the air quality monitors that we have, that the state of Montana has, and then that we've distributed around. Every public school in our community has an air quality monitor through Purple. And folks can get real-time data on, is the air safe for me to breathe? Is it great for outdoor activities like sports? Should I limit my exertion and what I'm doing out there to protect my lungs and to protect my health?
So when we come back, I want you to share quickly, what are the categories or groups of people that are probably vulnerable under those conditions? Because the precaution is out there. Generally speaking, there are certain members of our communities across Montana that are going to be a little more susceptible. I want you to describe that for us so we have a good handle on it. And then, John, also when we come back, I'm going to bring up the topic of COVID.
And of course you are.
I'm not going to apologize for it just because it's something that we all experience, right? We'll talk about the experience that we had, but I want to have a little different twist. I want to talk to you about lessons learned from a public health officer, because I view you, your colleagues, you all across the state as being the guys in the trenches that keep our communities safe. Well, good morning again, everyone. Thank you for joining us on Voices of Montana. This is Steve Arviscal. I'm honored to be the guest host today. And Tom's doing great. Just taking some time to relax, which he absolutely deserves. He's helping me behind the scenes, which I really appreciate. Thank you, Tom. This morning, we're talking to John Forte, CEO, Riverstone Health. John, we've covered a lot of topics. We have a consensus in the studio, and I'm not sure what it's like out there, but none of us are going on a cruise ship anytime soon, or if we do, apparently with no more than 400 people on board the ship at the time. That is everyone in agreement? No cruise. Oh, I just hate to do this to the travel industry, but beyond the cruise ship controversy, you've given us great guidance on ticks. We were talking about the upcoming fire season because we know, we pray that it's moderated by the right changes to our weather, and we can kind of soften what we might expect to happen. But if it happens, it produces smoke. And when there's smoke in the air, people have to be concerned about the health impacts of that. So, John, we were talking about the air quality index, and I was curious, there's certain populations that should pay much closer attention to what that looks like when those notices are issued. What are those populations?
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. You know, smoke contains fine particles that irritate our lungs and eventually could end up in our bloodstream. The biggest groups, you know, if you have asthma, COPD, heart conditions, and children, older adults, and folks with chronic health conditions. Those are the most vulnerable populations across Montana. And unfortunately, even healthy individuals, if the air quality index gets into the hundreds, 200s, even healthy individuals during heavy smoke exposure can be impacted. They can get either short-term impacts or things that could trigger chronic health conditions.
Thank you for that. And pay attention. I'm assuming other public health organizations across the state issue press releases. And then I know that goes out to the media so that we're very well informed.
Yes.
I always feel that Montana does a good job of informing our communities about health conditions, especially related to those wildfires and the conditions that come as a result of that. I promise you, not maybe to your liking, but I do want to talk about COVID because it's been in the news. It's like this story that we lived that just kind of lives on for us. It lives on maybe emotionally for us, and in some cases significantly. It lives on because the dialogue in D.C. continues to play out. I don't want to talk about the public policy stuff behind that. I want to talk about the lessons learned at the public health officer level. We can all look back 6 years and know how it impacted us personally. You and I were both at an event here not too long ago where they were recognizing the families of the 600 people that died as a result of their COVID illness here just in Yellowstone County. And I don't know what the numbers were across the state. So it's a very real thing. It had very real impacts. Obviously, it came with other broader socioeconomic impacts, too. I did work on our Open and Safe campaign to try and help businesses move through the shutdowns that came. We all wrestled with masks and vaccines, all that stuff were at play. That's, you know, you could debate on either side of that. Was that warranted? Should we have shut down or not? Do we need all that? I just want to know, because you have to work on this every day. You're responsible to help guide our public health. What were the lessons that jumped off of this experience for you that you live in and work with today?
Yeah, you know, Steve, Grandma always said, don't talk about politics, religion, or public health at the Thanksgiving table.
We're not Thanksgiving, so we are going to talk about
public health. There you go. So, you know, this hantavirus, you know, that's been in the news is evidence that some of our lessons learned from COVID actually stuck with the general population. And the pandemic was really a crash course in what we call epidemiology for the entire country. And I'll call that epidemiology 101. It taught the public what transmission means. What does a spread of a virus or bacterial infection, what incubation periods are and what a fatality rate is, the difference between droplet spread and airborne spread. Taught people what it means when scientists say, and health public health professionals like me say, you know, we're still learning. We're still gathering data. We're still examining the facts and the evidence. And as individuals, it brought up a lot of feelings about what can we actually do to feel in control, right? At the end of the day, I think that's why you don't go on cruise ships, Steve. You know, you feel out of control when you're on the cruise.
You're absolutely right.
And, you know, so feeling out of control, a lot of folks felt out of control during the COVID pandemic. And as public health professionals and the health officer here for Yellowstone County, you know, one of my first order of business coming into this new role 3 years ago was to build relationships and rebuild trust. And the pandemic destroyed trust. It destroyed relationships folks that, you know, we thought we had really good connections with and strong relationships with, it created mistrust. And mistrust across our society, I'm not going to fix it across the world, but I know I can fix it here in Yellowstone County and in our little slice of Montana.
So give me an example of, you know, what are the steps to build trust in the system? Because it's really important that our public health system is impactful, effective, provides good information, quality, that we're paying attention to the guidance we receive. So that communication and trust needs to be there in order for your job to impact the community, because we have to be responsive to a certain extent. What are the steps you feel you've taken that have best served to heal and establish trust?
Yeah, you know, I think it's working, you know, with your prior employer, economic development, the Chamber of Commerce, local business, getting out and building relationships with business leaders, with folks in our community, with elected leaders, and figuring out and saying, you know, start every conversation with, I just want to sit down and have a cup of coffee. You know, we're never going to agree on 100% of everything in the world. And that's just true of society. But we've got to break down the tribalism that exists. Everybody's really quick to back into their own corners and protect their own argument. In public health, my approach has been to sit down with folks, even particularly folks that don't agree with some of the things that we have to say, and say, well, where are we coming from? And where can we agree? Where is there common ground? Where do we agree that, you know what, we want to protect life, health, and safety for all Montanans, regardless of who you are, where you come from? We want you to live an amazing life to your fullest potential. And what are the steps we need to take to get there?
John, having lived the COVID experience here in Montana, and I was in a role where I needed to be as helpful as I could to our local business community. And so I watched the challenges business had. I watched also the challenge our healthcare delivery system had in a really significant way. And my wife's been a nurse for 32 years, and she feels that the system has not really fully recovered.
Yeah.
From the demands that were placed upon them during the COVID-19 experience. That said, I know there was some reaction to decisions that were made. I think some laws in Montana changed as a result of that COVID experience. Refresh our memory a little bit. What there was, I think, some changes to how the county commissioners relate to public health officer and decision-making, information sharing. What's that new structure look like?
Yeah, you know, Steve, we have a really great relationship here in Yellowstone County. I work really well with all three of our county commissioners, city council, the mayor, prior mayor, and new mayor Nelson. You know, that's part of, you know, what I do in public health and how I collaborate. It's building relationships and communicating and sharing information. And whenever something goes bump in the night here in Yellowstone County, one of my first calls, texts, or emails is to our commissioners, to our mayor, to our local electeds to say, here's what I know. Here's what we're doing about it. Any suggestions? What do you think we should do? And the new structure for us is, not only do we have a county board of health with both city and county representation on there, we have what we call a local governing authority, or local governing body. House Bill 121 came out of the legislative session 21-22, and it really dictated how health officers across the state should and must communicate more effectively with their local leaders and with their communities. And, you know, I've never had that problem. 121 didn't really change much for us here in Yellowstone County, because Riverstone Health, the Yellowstone City County Health Department, had good relationships, had open communication, and honest communication with our local electeds, with the business community, with our hospital systems. And you're right, and your wife's right. The healthcare system is broken. It is broken in our region. It is broken across the country. But you have a huge number of committed professionals, all of us at Riverstone, at the hospitals up the street and across this community and across the state that are committed to fixing it. And I think the rural health transformation dollars that are coming into the state right now and what the state is doing, the Gene Forte administration, Director Brereton, Health and Human Services, we have a chance to fix the health system. We have a chance to fix a broken system. And we don't have to blow it all up and throw it all out. But people are hurting. People are struggling. People have been hurt by the inefficiencies and the ineffectiveness of our healthcare system across Montana and across the country. And we owe them an apology that we live in such a broken system. And we owe them the opportunity to fix and rebuild trust, rebuild an effective care network, and take care of rural Montanans across the state.
John, thank you. That's such a unique relationship because the elected officials are accountable to the people. The public health officers have the expertise that's essential to inform and keep the public healthy. So elected officials, public health officers, that relationship needs to work well in order for the system to be impactful and do what it's intended to do. Well, our time has just kind of flown by. That's what happens on Voices of Montana. We've been talking to John Forte, CEO of Riverstone Health, public health officer for the city and county of Yellowstone. You've been in the trenches in public health for many, many years. I know you partner across the state of Montana with your colleagues to help keep us healthy and safe in Montana. You've been on the road a little bit. I think you said you were out in D.C. doing some work in Helena. Give us a quick summary of what the heck are you working on right now?
Oh, gosh. Everything and anything, Steve. You know, politics is not a spectator sport. It's a full contact sport.
Oh, yes, it is.
And so, you know, got to get out in the arena and meet with folks. And so, was in D.C. a week ago, started off the week talking about teaching health centers. You know, Riverstone is part of a teaching health center network that exists around the country, developing the next generation of family medicine practitioners. We were the first residency in the state of Montana and one of the first 11 across the country. So we're talking about funding. We met with HHS staff, chief of staff for RFK, Tom Engels, who's the HRSA administrator, a couple big wigs at HHS and HRSA, talking about funding for that program. Then we transitioned up to Capitol Hill, had a meeting in the speaker's office. Talked about health center funding and how we can bring funds to Montana through the Rural Health Transformation Program. And I had a chance to meet with Team Danes, Team Downing, and Team Sheehy while I was up there. They were back here, you know, and it was recess, and I was on the Hill. So we were talking about funding for a new clinic in Joliet. And then I had a chance to meet with Secretary Burgum and his wife talking about outdoors and health. And we all know it. We live here. We live in the outdoors. You're healthier when you're outside and you're engaged in outdoor activity. And we're going to bring some really cool opportunities to rails and trails and get folks outdoors and healthier, building a healthier Montana.
That's that Healthy by Design initiative that, Riverstone has been a part of. And it's all across the country. When we're outside and active, we're absolutely healthier. Hey, tomorrow, thank you, John. I really appreciate your insight. I appreciate your hard work and how you help safeguard you and your colleagues across Montana, help safeguard us, keeping us healthy and safe as we enjoy the great Montana outdoors.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.